Welcome to the MediaCap Magazine podcast. My name is Filena Keane and I'm the content and social media editor. Today I'm joined by Samantha Missingham to talk about the launch of her new project, Meet the Book Talkers, and to discuss the evolution of book marketing. Welcome, Sam. Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
I will do. My name is Sam Missingham and I'm founder of a new community called Meet the Book Talkers. And I also have another community called The Empowered Author. And my background actually has always been in marketing, well, marketing in magazines and then marketing in books. So I started working in business to business and consumer magazines. I worked on magazines such as Marketing Week, Design Week. I also worked on consumer magazines about cars and weddings and photography and gardening and all kinds of things. But I guess they all have something in common, which is actually about building a community around content as the number one kind of thing. And then secondly, trying to convince that community to spend some money on your content in a number of different ways. Obviously, there are different models for different things. So magazines obviously have a different model to the book industry, but the kind of same thing applies, which is obviously around books. You have readers who are there's the kind of broadest sense of your community, but then also you obviously have sort of subgroups of those depending on their specific interests. So they might be interested in, you know, obviously genre fiction. So they might like sci-fi, fantasy, crime, romance, but also obviously publishing. Book publishing is a much bigger world than that. So you also have things like dictionaries and Bibles and nonfiction and business books and cookbooks and children's books, obviously. So book publishing is a multitude of communities within the broadest sense of readers, basically. So that's the space I've always worked in, which is working in sort of hobbyist community interests and trying to convince them that they need to pay for content, which, as we know, is not a particularly easy thing to convince people of nowadays.
Having worked in marketing and publishing for such a long time, how have you seen book marketing evolve over the last, let's say, two decades?
Book publishing is one of those industries that has obviously had a healthy and robust book selling. So we're retail market, basically. So we've obviously always had physical bookshops. We've had some chains and we've also had independent booksellers who've always done really well. And then obviously we will talk about the sort of digital transformation of the book industry, which started at about 2009, which obviously I would say gave tons of opportunities but also some huge risks that book publishers in particular had to get to grips with. So what I mean by that is obviously when Amazon came along and kind of successfully implemented its ebook sort of platform, where obviously you can sell ebooks anywhere. So that was the kind of starting point. I mean, for starters, they started with print books, but you know, once they went into digital, obviously publishers feared that what would happen would be the same as other industries or other entertainment industries, that the whole industry would go from physical to a digital only world. So obviously everything that happened to the music industry, or obviously, you know, kind of to a certain extent magazines, to a certain extent TV and film, that suddenly you had players like Spotify or Netflix or, you know, different other conglomerates that kind of grouped all the content together and sort of devalued it for everybody individually, but created massive value for themselves as one entity. So, you know, Spotify being a very good example of that, you know, obviously we could argue many things for Spotify in terms of just making music so readily available to so many people and how fantastic that is. But then when you start talking to the artists about it, you will obviously find a very different story about how many times their music is streamed and how that they earn pennies from it. So obviously we have all kinds of issues about models, about talent and who, you know, how the money is, you know, apportioned around to everybody. So in terms of the book industry, Amazon came along, made ebooks available. And also we then obviously had Apple coming into the market with their iPhones and their iPads, which obviously then opened up a whole potential of apps, which book publishers were kind of like, oh, cripes, everybody is going to, you know, read book apps, or everybody's going to read ebooks. Nobody wants to pay very much for an ebook. So at the time, some of the deals going on for ebooks were, you know, an ebook for 20p or an ebook. Obviously, now you can get ebooks for 99p. In fact, you can get ebooks for free. That is not a great model for a book publisher that relies entirely, You know, that book publishers do not have lots of revenue streams. They have one revenue stream, which is the money from selling their books. So if suddenly your books have no value, it's not a great outlook for you when you start, you know, putting that into the future. So publishers panicked and, you know, tried lots of things that failed. They're not digital kind of businesses. They are not entrepreneurial businesses in terms of away from book publishing. They're not good at startups. They're not good at, you know, innovation on many levels. So while Amazon was busily innovating and doing incredible things for books, you know, literally I could list 10 things of innovation that were incredible that Amazon did. And obviously the thing that they are in sight of all the time is their reader. So they are reader focused. So obviously when they decided, actually, we will make audiobooks really amazing and obviously sell them, they bought Audible, you know, so the subscription model for audio they worked out. They also have something called, you know, the sort of thing of when you read your ebook and you stop at page 28 and then you can pick that up again on any device. So all of the synchronicity across to, you know, there are so many things that they thought, actually, this is something readers will like. We can test this and we know this. I haven't talked about marketing very much, but the marketing that happened for books was actually about marketing to the trade. So marketing to booksellers, because most books were sold through physical bookshops. So obviously that would be a whole strategy of how do you communicate to the likes of Waterstones or your independent booksellers to basically sell as many books as possible. Now, obviously the difference of a bookshop that we have from a bookshop to any online retailer is a bookshop has a very limited, so it has a finite bookshelf. You know, even though some bookshops are huge, it still is a finite number of books. Now, if I put this into context, last Thursday, we have what's called Super Thursday in the industry, which is when the most and the kind of biggest books are published because it's the kind of run up to Christmas, which is when the kind of mass amount of books are sold. So a good chunk of books are sold as gifts, but also in this period from now until Christmas. On that day, last Thursday, 1,900 new books were published. 1,900, you know, every time I say it, I can hardly believe it myself. But when you think about trying to get 1,900 books, new books, into a bookshop, obviously, for one day, obviously, it doesn't make any sense. So then you have to think, okay, then publishers and booksellers are only going to stock the books that they think are going to do the best, because a bookseller is in the business of selling books. They don't just want to show lovely books on their shelves that aren't going to sell anything. Do you know what I mean? That's of no purpose to them. So they are then making decisions about what books are going to sell the best. And also, obviously, they have a selection and a curated selection based on the customers in their kind of vicinity. What that then means is if you're a big publisher and you have a lot of money you could spend on trade marketing and convincing people that your book is going to be the one that's going to sell the best. So clearly, if you have a celebrity memoir or if you have a big cookbook from Delia Smith or Jamie Oliver, and you put a lot of money behind the marketing and publicity, chances are most big booksellers are going to say, yes, we're definitely going to sell some Delia Smiths, we're definitely going to sell some Jamie Olivers, and we're definitely going to sell celebrity memoirs. So obviously what you then get to is you then get a kind of smallish number of books that get stocked into bookshops and kind of do well. And then almost everybody else either doesn't get stocked in there at all, or you might be lucky to get one book in there. So obviously you're not going to do particularly well. So that's kind of, it, broadly speaking, what happened before. But obviously Amazon came along and said, hey, we've created an infinite bookshelf for you to sell infinite number of books. And actually the only thing that will differentiate, you know, a very small poetry book from a Delia Smith, you will get exactly the same space on Amazon. It will kind of take up the same amount of kind of retail space. And then it's up to you what you do to try and sell it. Yeah, so that's a very different proposition, an infinite bookshelf, so from a marketing perspective, to a finite bookshelf where you're trying to convince people that your big books are the ones that need to go on there. So that is, in broad terms, what has sort of changed in the landscape. And then obviously sort of marketing has adapted to that difference of landscape ultimately. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really insightful. I'm still thinking about the 1,900 books.
It's mad, isn't it?
That was just in one day.
Super Thursday, it's called, yeah.
Very interesting. All of that all of that makes a lot of sense. It's a really nice overview of everything. What would you say are the key things we're seeing today?
Yeah, well, I suppose in terms of marketing, what has actually happened, and this still happens, is ultimately, if you work in a marketing team in a publisher, so I'm going to use a big, they're called the big five publishers. So this is Penguin Random House, Hachette, Simon & Schuster, Pan Macmillan, and one other, I've forgotten who that is, Hachette, HarperCollins. Yeah, I think I've said them all. So I used to work at HarperCollins, so I'm using them as an example. So HarperCollins, as the kind of overall big five publisher, publishing house, will have a number of different imprints. Again, it's a lot. It could be 30 different imprints. And they are 30 little mini publishing businesses that have their own identity, that sort of publish their own little slice of kind of, you know, curated taste that they have. And that could be in a genre. So it could be a crime fiction imprint, but it could also be just a curated sort of taste-based imprint across all different things. So if we use HarperCollins, they have what we would call a literary fiction imprint called Fourth Estate. And this is where they publish people like Doris Lessing, Jonathan Franzen, Hilary Mantel. So very, what I guess would be, you describe as sort of high-end literary books. But they also publish Nigel Slater, high-end cookery book. So they go for all sort of, you know, a particular kind of taste in literature. So that would be one imprint. So across a business, they have all these different imprints that are kind of publishing all different types of books. And they, in those imprints, they have a marketing person or a team, not very many people at all. Most of marketing for books happens around for publication date. So if you have a new Nigel Slater, so I think Nigel Slater came out 2 weeks ago, you will have potentially a group of people, very small number, maybe two, maybe three people, who will be responsible for running a marketing campaign. And then there will be a publicity team, but the marketing campaign, which leads right up to publication date. So sort of everything that happens will be lined up, all of the kind of levers that you can pull to make a book successful in marketing and publicity will happen for a big book like a Nigel Slater book up to publication. And then there will be obviously potentially some ads that will continue to run and some a little bit of publicity after. But in the main, the marketing stops at or close to publication. Okay. So certainly true for fiction that, you know, you will have potentially quite a lot of energy put into your book. It will get to publication date and then it will tail off really quickly. So when you think about the life cycle of a book, people do buy books around publication because that's a big driver for people. It's like, oh, I've seen a poster for that, or I've seen an ad on Amazon, or I've, you know, read something from in a magazine, in the Waitrose magazine that Nigel Slater said about his new book, blah, 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 blah. So obviously, because all this activity happens, lots of people will buy it around publication day. But of course, books are, you know, if you've never read a book, then it's a new book to you. And that's always true. Publications that are coming out, we, you know, those are called front list. And then you have backlist, which is kind of everything else. So front list is where all of the energy for marketing gets put. I would say 95% of the marketing energy goes book to book to book to book to book around publication date. And it makes sense, that works and they sell lots of books and blah, blah, blah. It tails off very quickly. But the, at least for big publishers, at least 50%, if not 60% of their revenue comes from their backlist. So I use Agatha Christie as an example because HarperCollins publishes Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie is still the most sold author in the world. So that is still the number one crime author. So, you know, a woman that's been dead for however many years, because they do for things like Agatha Christie, which they call literary estates, they do continual marketing for those specific ones. So it won't be very many, but a small number of literary estates where they do continual marketing. And also, of course, people like Agatha Christie, her books continue to sell because, you know, her books have been converted into theatre all the time. Her books are converted into films all the time. So there's a continual conversation around her books. So people might go and see the film and then think, oh, actually, I'll start and read the books, blah, blah, blah. So this kind of like estate kind of continual marketing only happens with a small number of books, small number of authors. So obviously they keep selling. Whereas for most people, and obviously I'm often, so I talk to authors a lot traditionally published authors who go through this experience of, it's very difficult to get a book deal. It's very difficult to get a literary agent. Then you get a book deal. That process can take 3 to 5 years minimum. And then it takes, so if you get a book deal, then your book will take another 18 months, 2 years to come out. So that's how slowly the publishing works. So you've taken all this time and then your book comes out and they say, oh yes, you know, your book's coming out, you know, sort of October 2026 or something like that. And then you obviously get yourself in a complete tizz about it and it's all the most amazing thing and it's going to be wonderful. And, you know, you're finally an author and this is what you've dreamed about. And then a publisher will spend 6 weeks doing a little bit of marketing because you're not really a priority at their list. And then they don't kind of mention you again. So there are a lot of very unhappy authors who go through this process, who think it's going to be a certain thing, and it just isn't. Do you know what I mean? All these like ideas that they've had of what an author can be. So it, like they think, oh, my book will be in a bookshop window. No, it won't. It definitely won't. Oh, you know, I'll get a speaking gig at a literary festival. Oh, probably not. You know, not until you've been kind of, you've written 3, 5, however many books. So you know, there's a slightly incongruous kind of thing that goes on about this book-to-book-to-book marketing, which, as I always describe, when they have a book, I don't know if you're a Sally Rooney fan, but the new Sally Rooney book came out a couple of weeks ago. It's called Intermezzo. So Sally Rooney is an Irish author who's incredibly successful. Her books have been made into films, totally loved by people your age, you know, young women in the main, I guess. It's done really well. And so her publisher, who's called Faber, they knew, obviously they sold millions of her books. They know her new book is going to be a big event book, you know, event marketing. And then they obviously put every bit of energy around it. They get a massive poster on the tube. And, you know, what I would say is they pull every lever that they can to make a book successful, and they put money into it because they know they're going to sell a lot. So they get their money back. I sort of see this as like a big kind of cruise liner putting all their engines on and going really fast. You know what I mean? It's like, yes, we can turn all the engines on, but often or usually publisher does not turn all their engines on because they cannot turn all their engines on all the time for every book. They just don't have enough people to do that. So that's how book marketing has worked. When I worked at HarperCollins, my job was actually called head of audience development. So different from book to book to book marketing, my job was, how can I mean, it was the most fantastic kind of remit of a job, which is come up with ideas across all of our books, try to kind of connect readers collectively to our books. So when I say, obviously, a publishing company like HarperCollins has been publishing for 200 years, so they have 200 years worth of books and backlist books that I could come up with creative ideas of how you could kind of combine them. So they own Mills and Boons, which is romance publisher. They have tons of romance going back, you know, many, many years, many really successful authors. So I ran kind of virtual romance festivals where I did, you know, quite fun things just using online tools and blah, blah, blah. We also had, you know, I did the same with sci-fi, and that was, I joined forces with the BFI, who were doing a sci-fi film season. And I sort of said, okay, if you like a sci-fi film, chances are you like a sci-fi book. And if you like a sci-fi book, chances are you like a sci-fi film. This makes a lot of sense for us to join our kind of audiences together. So I did a really fun kind of campaign with the BFI. And I ended up with like Margaret Atwood doing a kind of chat with online, which I was just like, oh, Margaret Atwood, you know. And so, and also I did a big event with the Game of Thrones author. So I did a lot of what I would say is like pulling readers towards us, as opposed to it being, I am selling this book, and I want people to buy this book, so I want the readers of this book to act. I was more kind of like, how can we pull people towards us? So I did a lot of like the sort of implemented the social media strategy across the business. They didn't have an email strategy at the time, so I implemented an email strategy, and they had tons and tons of email addresses, an unbelievable amount that I just come up with ideas for. So, you know, so yeah, so there is book to book marketing, then there is audience development. In the main, publishers do book marketing. They don't do audience development. And what you see from the likes of Amazon and Waterstones and other retailers is their job is audience development. You know, so they are bringing people. If you ever want to look at some really good ads, Amazon's ads for Audible are some of the best ads I've ever seen. And what they are doing is they are showing how powerful a book can be when transcribed, you know, put into an audio format, how good it can be in terms of escapism, being taken into a story, maybe thinking of yourself as a character in the story or going along with a story. It's so good. They're so good at convincing people the real value of reading. And that's, I think, my personal view is publishing doesn't really do that very well. You know, we have like the best industry. We produce a million things covering a million different topics that excite a million different types of people. And we can't communicate like how extraordinary that is. You know, like we're not selling boring things. You know what I mean? We're selling these little portable bits of magic kind of thing. So, yeah, that's what I sort of feel about, I suppose, some of the limitations of publishing.
You're right in that there is so much potential that you can tap into, especially now with social media, obviously book talk and the subsequent appearance of the TikTok made me buy it sections, yeah, and all the bookstores. You've recently launched an amazing platform called Meet the Book Talkers. So that's a platform bringing together book talkers, authors and publishers. So what is the idea behind this community, yeah, and what inspired you to launch it?
Thank you so much. Yeah. So the idea behind it was, so because basically I am a complete nerd about publishing. So the one bit I haven't mentioned is that I used to work on the magazine called The Bookseller, which is the trade magazine about the publishing industry. So when I worked there, it was when the transformation of the industry was happening. So I launched something called Future Book, which looked at the sort of transformative kind of opportunities of innovation, but also kind of strategically how digital and everything that digital means would impact a business. So that's the bit that I did. So I was a total nerd for it. Kind of pretty much have always observed what is going on in the industry. I love innovation. I love anyone that does creative book marketing. That really rocks my world. That's how sad my little world is. But anyway, so I have obviously been on Twitter for a very long time. I've seen that a great conversation happened early stages on Twitter. You know, suddenly it was kind of like, oh, it's okay. A new author could speak to a librarian in a different part of the country. And, you know, a bookseller could speak to a literary agent. Conversations that never happened because of how the industry works. So all of a sudden it was like, oh, actually, we not only did we all get to find out a lot more about each other, but it breaks a bit, you know, there's a bit more transparency about how things work. So authors were starting to talk about some of their own experiences or how much money they made, blah, blah, blah. So I loved all of that. It opened up a lot of things. Also, obviously, was a bit of an opportunity for authors to talk about their books. Never really was a massive driver for book sales, you know, but it definitely did sell some books, but in the main, it was about awareness. Then obviously Facebook was kind of happening. Also, Facebook does a slightly different thing. Lots of authors use Facebook to keep their author community kind of in one place and obviously engage with them. Works perfectly well, but again, wouldn't say a massive driver for book sales, but definitely serves a different sort of purpose. Instagram, ditto, beautiful, you know, kind of aesthetic images of books, absolutely full of it on Instagram. But I think the nature of how you have to put in links and blah, blah, blah meant that it didn't necessarily sell. So my point being is all of those have sold books because obviously they raise awareness with readers and potential readers who may go away and buy in Waterstones, they may go on Amazon and buy, but it's not that easy to know whether they've come from Instagram or from Twitter or blah, blah, blah. Whereas TikTok came along and somehow, basically, we know that TikTok has been driving tons and tons of book sales. So we know this on a number of reasons. A, because TikTok obviously has a shop. TikTok, you can link out to, you know, your book sales to buy from somewhere else. And also, obviously, booksellers, as in physical booksellers, have started to see people coming into their shops and saying, I saw, you know, fantastic fantasy book on TikTok called blah, 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 blah. Do you stock it? Obviously, now what we see in pretty much every bookshop is we see an area which is as seen on BookTok or as seen on TikTok. And it mostly shows a sort of a particular bit of publishing. So even though on BookTok, every type of book is talked about, I know there's this sort of thing that only these types of books, blah, blah, blah. But certainly by the time it gets to people actually acting, there does seem to be, it seems to have lent itself to fantasy, to romance, kind of spicy books. So a type of books, which no one would have predicted. There's no reason why that would have happened. You know, no one would have thought, oh, actually, yeah, it'll be really good for like romance stroke fantasy crossover. You know, there's no one who could have predicted that. But that is how it's sort of trended. So obviously then publishers started going, wait a second, everyone's talking about book talk, blah, blah, blah. On TikTok, there are so many people who talk either exclusively or in the main about books, i.e. book talkers. I cannot even begin to tell you how many there are. Like when I went started on TikTok about 2 years ago, quite late in the game, really, and sort of pretty much every book talker I see, I follow, irrespective of where they're from, whether I can understand the language. But, you know, there are so many. Literally, it feels like an endless amount of them and more people joining all the time. And they are happily talking about books in a way that is quite simple in the main, quite, you know, and I keep using the word authentic about book talkers. Like, I sort of feel like actually sort of speaking to a camera is not very authentic. That's not, you know what I mean? But the way that they talk about books seems to really connect with people because they talk about books in all different types of ways. So it might be a book haul. So they might have, you know, been to a shop and bought, you know, 8 books that they then will talk through. It might be, you know, that they talk about books that they really enjoyed in their childhood. It might be books that have certain themes or certain characters. So it might be that they talk about kind of queer characters in books that they love, you know. So or it might be, oh, these are, if you love these incredibly successful top books, then you'll also love it. Do you know what I mean? So there is a multitude of ways that people talk about books, which I think often reflects how people talk about books in the real world. So the kind of number one way that people get recommendations is through word of mouth. So meet the book talkers. So I went on, I saw these millions of brilliant, brilliant, amazing book talkers sharing book love. And then I realized, okay, even though this has been going for quite a while now, a good couple of years, I knew that publishers were talking about book talk. I know that kind of the industry had been talking about it. And believe me, publishing is not an industry to respond very quickly to new trends. So, you know, it was slowly kind of going, oh, TikTok, you know. But, you know, so they know that. So some publishers had a presence on TikTok, that HarperCollins actually is one of the best examples. But in the main, either even big publishers either didn't have a presence at all or had their name up there but hadn't created any content. Authors as well, some authors are on TikTok, are brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant at using the platform. They completely understand how to communicate their book. They completely understand how to use the kind of tools in the way that you create videos on TikTok to kind of really maximize it, make it, you know, make their book look very appealing and use visuals and different images and blah, blah, blah. And also obviously trends and memes and different sounds that you could use. So there were some people using it, but not very many. So in my mind, I was thinking, okay, we know that book talkers are selling books. We know that book talkers are talking about our books all the time, but authors and publishers are not taking advantage or not connecting with those. So there's a massive missed opportunity here for all of us who are publishing 1900 books and more a day. We need to find other ways to get these books into book talkers' hands. So that's what Meet the Book Talkers is about. Book talkers sign up to the site and tell me all different things about what genres they like. And then publishers and authors can post their book onto the site and say, this is what my book is about. You know, it's, well, the latest book that comes to mind is there's a witchinary, which is a witch dictionary. So it's all about different kind of witchy spell terms and different spells that you could do. Very, very much a sort of TikTok-y type book. So that is on the site. And then I kind of steer the book talkers to it and they can say, oh, actually, yes, I do really fancy that. And I would like a free copy, or I would like to read an early copy of that book. So it's really just a case of saying to authors and publishers in particular, you don't have to be on TikTok all the time, because most of them don't have the like human resource to do it well. As I talked about earlier, is book marketing people are doing book to book to book to book marketing, and they have so many books that they work on. They do not have time to then say, oh, I go and create TikToks all the time, which is kind of what you have to do. You have to keep creating content and keep posting on TikTok, when actually they are already more than busy for one person doing their book to book to book to book marketing and meeting all of their challenges of hitting targets of publication date. So in the main, they just don't have enough people in marketing to run a TikTok account kind of successfully and to think across the business and, you know, think about all the ways that you could maybe potentially combine books across different imprints. So, you know, all of those things that I talked about. So really, my sort of very simple proposition is, if you're an author and publisher and you don't want to be on TikTok and you don't want to, or you don't have the time, resource, energy, desire, post your book on Meet the BookTokers and I will basically drive BookTokers to it. That is the most simple bit of it. There are some other things that I'm doing as well, which are, you know, are quite fun. And obviously I have different genre newsletters and you know, other things, other sort of levers that I can pull. But that's fundamentally it. So it's a kind of, yeah, saying to authors and publishers, you don't have to be on TikTok, but I will help you find BookTokers. And you really should be finding BookTokers because they are passionately talking about other people's books and they're selling books. So, you know, don't miss an opportunity type of thing. And, you know, my sort of number one thing also is that the site kind of showcases what BookTokers are doing. And I'm sort of, that's my kind of starting point, which is, as we know, when you go on TikTok, especially kind of early days before the algorithm kind of works out every single thing about you, is it's quite overwhelming. Do you know what I mean? And you get kind of delivered all kinds of stuff. Some of it is obviously silly and weird and mad and blah, blah, blah. And you know, and I think if you don't kind of persevere, it just can be very overwhelming. And you sort of think, oh, I can't even bother to go through that process to get to the BookTokers to understand how it works. So I'm showcasing in lots of different ways on my site, different types of BookTokers that people can just kind of click on one video and see that video of a BookTokker talking about a book or, you know, in a particular, you know, like I have done a kind of curated list of BookTokers who spoke about translation, women in translation. So it was all the TikTok, all the BookTalks who talked about, there's a Women in Translation month, and they all talked about those particular books. So I put them all together in a kind of curated list. So if you were not wanting to go on TikTok and get sort of distracted by all kinds of things, then you could just look at these particular videos and go, oh, that's actually really cool how they've talked about translated fiction. That might be something. So if you think about the number of different ways I can curate TikToks around books. So I had one which was, this is a huge kind of area. So when Taylor Swift was doing her Eras tour, a million different BookTokers went to the tour, but also then created TikToks about books related to her songs. I mean, there are literally millions of them. So I curated around it. So as you can imagine, there are an endless amount of ways that I could curate around different themes and around different content. So it's Black History Month. So I've got, you know, all of the Black BookTokers to follow. And then I'm doing one about Black authors. So from a creative marketing point of view, obviously, like, I have limitless amounts of ideas. It's just a case of not enough time to do all of them exactly how I want. But yeah, that's basically Meet the BookTokers. It's a place to showcase BookTokers, but kind of introduce them to books that they might not have come across and help authors and publishers connect with them.
I came across Author Talk and yes. Writer Talk,
yes,
which
so
are
good.
Obviously much much smaller communities.
Yeah.
And I actually wanted to get your thoughts on these communities. And do you think they have the potential to grow and develop into something much bigger than they currently are?
Yeah, I think we will always be limited by the number of people who want to be on TikTok. And I think what I have found, certainly sort of being on all different social media platforms, I think I get a lot of authors who say to me, oh, I'm supposed to be on TikTok, or my agent said I need to be on TikTok, or my marketing person said I need to. And I always say, do you actually like TikTok? And I go, oh, no, I literally can't stand it. And I'm like, no, then, literally no. Because, you know, it's like you have to enjoy it. You have to kind of find it entertaining or funny or informative, or and also in the main, you have to be happy speaking to a camera. Now, based on the fact that a lot of authors are written word people, this is why Twitter really took off for authors and publishing people. It's because it's the written word. They don't want to speak to camera all the time. So, you know, if you don't want to speak to camera and you don't like TikTok, do not launch a TikTok, please. You know what I mean? There is literally no point, because you will, and obviously there are millions of accounts like this where people have created 6 videos and then they stop. And that's fine, because, you know, then you have, at least you have your name is there, so people can tag you and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, concentrate on what you enjoy. If you know that you really gel with Instagram and your followers and following count goes up. And when you create content, you know that you in the main enjoy creating the content there, focus on Instagram. If you feel like that about Facebook, focus on Facebook. If you are an author, your business is writing books. So you are not going to be able to create content across all of the different social media platforms and do a really good job. Do you know, even social media managers cannot create content across all, you know what I mean? And that's what they do all day long. You cannot create content across all platforms and do all of them really well. So focus fundamentally on what you like and where you can see, you know, the sort of growth. But I think certainly with author talk and publisher talk and all of writing talk, that would always be a community, because authors, as well as obviously talking about their books, they always talk about the experience they've had of getting published, their you know, all of the different things that go about around writing, you know, all of the different craft sort of skills and things that they've learned. So they're always very happy to share that. So I think they will always talk about that. There's lots of really valuable information on there. There are a few good literary agents who talk really openly about trends and, you know, how to get agent deals and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I think it will always stay smaller just because of kind of what I've talked about in terms of, you know, the sort of nature of authors. And also don't forget, authors in the main, they have another job as well. So, you know, they might be a musician or they might work in the council or whatever, a million different jobs. So they already have a job. Some people will come to writing a bit later in life. That's often what happens when maybe they've had children, then, you know, they then find themselves with a little bit more time and they've, you know, so this is not people just who are writers who are doing full-time writing and blah, blah. Very, very few writers are like that. So, you know, the sort of realities of their life is this is limited amounts of time. And they want to write. You know what I mean? That's the bit that they're passionate about, is the writing. Most authors or many authors hate the fact they have to do kind of social media and publicity. You know what I mean? They don't want to do those things that much. Some authors are really natural at it and they definitely have a kind of entrepreneurial marketing-y type sort of persona. But many don't. And that's fair enough. Do you know what I mean? That's completely fair enough. You cannot make authors become a different thing. So, yeah. So I think author talk, writing talk will always continue to grow. There'll always be really valuable information on there. But nothing will be quite what book talk is, basically. I think it's just slightly different.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree that it would, I don't know what would have to happen for it to grow to be the size of book talk. So definitely agree there. I could talk to you forever, but I'm conscious of time. So I'm going to ask you a final question, which is, what is your vision for the future of Meet the Book Talkers? And if there is anything that you'd like to share about what you'll be doing in the coming year with the platform.
Oh, bless you. Well, Meet the Book Talkers, in terms of my sort of big vision, I guess I do have a sort of big vision for 5-10 years time, but I am also very glad for it to just grow organically. When I was talking about the sort of big book talkers and the sort of big publishers, and they already have established relationships. And in the main, I'm not that interested in those people. What I am interested in is the huge number of book talkers who might have 500 followers or, you know, 1,000 or 10,000 or, you know, and they're, or even just starting out and they want to sort of build relationships with authors and publishers. I'm much more interested in facilitating that relationship. And if I can get a really steady flow of books going to book talkers talking about them and then selling books, everything about my site works. That's where I'd like to get to. I am still only like 3.5 weeks in, so I'm still at the very early stages, and I have 450 book talkers who've signed up, which I'm absolutely thrilled with.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, which is great. I'm so delighted with that. But I do think there are probably anywhere between 50 and 100,000 book talkers, you know, maybe 20 and 50,000. I don't know, but I don't know what the number is, but it's huge. So obviously I would like significantly more to sign up. But I know that that's a slow process. And I know people will have to talk about the site and say, actually, it was really good. And I got a really nice newsletter and and there are a lot of really interesting books on the site. And I don't have the money. This is all just bootstrapped with my own money. So I don't have the money to do this massive growth kind of thing. And like my target is £10,000, 10,000 people by Christmas. It's nothing like that. I don't have any money to do that. So it's all going to be growing organically. As long as I can feed myself and my daughter in the short term and keep a roof over our head. That's actually my short-term goal. And obviously what I would like it is to grow so that, you know, I can potentially, you know, buy a pair of boots or so. No, I'm joking. But, you know, I want it to grow. Of course I want it to grow, but I want it to grow in really positive ways. And I, you know, the thing that I'm very sort of wary of is authors get ripped off all the time. Publishers do, but in a sort of different way. Book talkers, you know, I would never want anyone to think, oh, actually, there's some kind of manipulation in this relationship, mm-hmm. or I'm somehow exploiting book talkers for the advantage of authors, or I'm exploiting authors by taking a, you know, a small amount of money each time. Do you know what I mean? So I'm feeling my way with it, and it only works if everybody moves forward kind of happily and feel like they get value from the site, and that is a good thing. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm going slowly and organically, and hopefully the growth will be sort of steady and positive. And then, you know, I'm also a sort of great believer that some things are going to happen that I'm not anticipating. Do you know what I mean? That some people might come into it and sort of go, actually, you know, it's incredible what you're doing. Could we collaborate in a way where we do blah, 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 blah? That might happen. And I'm totally open to all of those sort of ideas. So, yeah, so that's my sort of woolly answer, basically.
That's brilliant. Well, hopefully all of that will happen. And the members that you've already gotten in such a short space of time is fantastic. So wish you all the best for that. Oh,
thank you so much. Thank you for interviewing me. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure speaking to you as well. So thank you very much.